Welcome to another Michigan Writers Series evening, tonight featuring Sue Williams Silverman, author of Because I Remember Terror, Father, I Remember You, just released in paperback by the University of Georgia Press. It is an award-winning, powerful work of creative fiction revealing and evoking a child's incestuous experiences. She is also a short story writer, teacher of creative writing, and associate editor of Fourth Genre, Explorations in Nonfiction, published by the Michigan State University Press. Thank you for being with us and for agreeing to speak to our audience via the Internet.
Oh, thank you. I'm thrilled to be here. Thank you for inviting me.
Throughout your book, communication as expressed by you, the child is a failure. You're mute. You have no mouth. You have no words. You can't act. And yet you emerge as a masterful writer, creating work so subtle and yet explicit, articulate, yet leaving so much unspoken. Now you're publishing your memoirs, you're speaking, you're conducting workshops. That is to say, your job is words. What I'm trying to get at is the question of whether you're a born writer or a made one.
That is a good question. Nobody's asked me that before. First of all, I just want to emphasize that the book is creative nonfiction. I think maybe you said creative fiction in your introduction, but I just want to make sure that people know it is a nonfiction book. It's a memoir. And was I a born writer? I think in some ways that I was a born writer because of my childhood, in that I couldn't speak as a child. Incest is a kind of silent, it makes your family very silent. I mean, in terms of our private family, we had kind of a public language, in that my father had a very good job, and we had nice houses and drove nice cars, and we could present a very nice public image to the world. But inside the house, it was very silent because nobody talks about incest. Nobody would talk about what was going on. So my memory of myself as a child is of one of being very silent and my family being very silent. But in that silence, I think that I was kind of writing in my head or storing things up in my head, kind of sensory impressions or... that I was absorbing all of this stuff that I did not, as a child, have the ability to speak about, and certainly not write. So if you could say that writing, that you can be writing if you're just writing in your head, then yes, I think that that's true. But then the other part of it is sort of learning how to be a writer is kind of learning the technical stuff. So I mean, that I've studied and, you know, gotten an MFA degree in creative writing, you know, technical things that you do have to learn. Mm-hmm. But in terms of the creativity and just language, I think that I was always writing in my head.
Always verbal. Well, yes, you're quite right. I did misspeak and say fiction. I did mean to say nonfiction. But since you've brought it up, creative nonfiction is an apparent contradiction. How can you explain it?
I think that it's a term that hasn't been used all that long, mm-hmm. for all that long, really. Mm-hmm. And I think that it, in some ways, it probably originated to differentiate it from like academic writing and kind of scholarly writing. Because in my book, even though what I write is true and it's a memoir and it is nonfiction, I do use fictional techniques in that I use descriptions, dialogue, I mean, things that you would use mm-hmm. in a novel. Mm-hmm. Metaphor.
The image of the mouth and the silence and the is
right.
Very,
I mean,
very.
And that is, and those are kind of creative uh-huh. images. In that, I did not have those images as a child, but the adult me, while I was writing, I mean, I think writing nonfiction turn to sort of differentiate it, say, just from journal writing and turning it into art, is a matter of kind of understanding these metaphors. I mean, the things that you observed as a child, I could not have put into words then, of course, but through the writing process, I could sort of understand the metaphors.
Mm-hmm. And you're an associate editor of our own journal.
Right, that's published out of MSU Press,
yes.
Exactly. Fourth Genre Explorations in Nonfiction. Right, it's a really terrific journal. I'm really proud to be part of it.
You are equal parts writer and advocate for abused children and women. Our listeners should know that Sue conducts workshops on the silent language of child abuse, the world of an abused child, the addiction and recovery process, to educators and mental health professionals. Which is most satisfying to the soul, the writer or the advocate? If you can separate them, of course.
I can't choose one above the other, though, because they both are really important to me. In some ways, the writing process kept me alive, I think, for years. I mean, because for me to write this book, it was a kind of journey of discovery, because I really didn't know who I was. And because I'd spent all my life kind of silent and without a strong... it's not a matter of no self-esteem. I didn't have a sense of self. I mean, that's what incest sort of steals from you, is a sense of who you are. So I didn't know who I was. And so the writing process was a kind of journey of discovery, and I could find myself. So in that sense, I mean, it saved my life. And now, you know, some of the events I go to are kind of literary readings. Others are events where I'll give a speech, which is really, the speech is sort of geared towards, pleading really that child abuse should be seen as a human rights issue.
Mm-hmm.
And kind of give it that elevation. And that's really important to me, too, because, you know, why does our government, why does society, say, care much more about what happened, say, to hostages held overseas or, you know, what was going on in Bosnia and stuff? I mean, there seems to be that's where the money is, that's where the energy is, rather than what's happening to children right here in our own neighborhoods.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's something that really means a lot to me, too, so I don't think I can say that the writer or sort of the advocate is more. They both are important, and I think the really good thing for me is that I have found a way to kind of combine them, because in all my speeches I do read sections of the book, so I can sort of combine the two together, and that's the best of all possible worlds.
Yeah. Well, I did kind of set up a straw man for you. You are really high on life, despite your painful, excruciating childhood. Can you give credit to your writing for any of this?
Yes, I really can, because, again, to be sort of high on life, you have to find life and you have to find yourself. And that is what I did through the writing process. I mean, it was just sort of laying out one word and another word and another word and sort of following like a pathway of words towards me, towards mm-hmm. myself. And then finding me, then I could, and this is tough, but sort of learn to appreciate me and love myself. I mean, it's very hard, you know, say that.
Yes,
that
but it's myself. Clear in the book. It's clear in the book what you mean by that.
And really, you know, the cover of my book has a picture of me in second grade, and I sort of think of that as my inner child, and in many ways it's sort of loving the little girl within. And the inner child is sort of the keeper of the feelings. And now that she's heard and her voice is heard, that is sort of where my joy of life comes from, is sort of the young part of me.
Released.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah, the last part of your book is almost redeeming. It's explains how you look at life now and how you came to terms with your parents as well as your childhood.
Yes, I don't know if I would actually use come to terms with. I mean, there are a lot of ways. That probably is one phrase, because it's not, I haven't forgiven my parents, even though I could sit with them while they were dying and go through that process with them. I mean, to some extent, the young part of me, again, was sort of there with them wanting parents, like some kind of recognition before they died, you know, even though I didn't mm-hmm. get it. But come to terms, yeah, I mean, it's probably that. you know, some people say, well, you have had closure, which I'm not sure I buy that word. I don't know what closure really means. It's just that this bad thing happened, and you either let it still control, I mean, it controlled my childhood, so then it's my choice now. Do I want to let it control my adulthood, or do I want to take charge of my own life? And I guess I chose that I want to now take charge of my own life, so I do not see myself as a victim or anything like that. And, you know, some incest survivors will really give into it, and by that I mean either they could kill themselves, kill other people. You know, you think of the Menendez brothers who were incest survivors. They murdered their parents. I mean, there are different paths one can take. And I guess it is true that I mean, the path that I chose was not to put it behind me or anything like that, but just to take this experience and try to do something with it. I can't say even make the best of it. I mean, they're just, it's hard to use.
It's really difficult to come up with the language, and yet
it is.
You do. You do. And it's the images and the struggle that you're going through.
I guess the way to say it is that I chose life over death. And that, by death, I don't mean to sound melodramatic. It could be emotional death, spiritual death, physical death. And for a while, that's where I was. I was choosing spiritual death and emotional death. And then there was a time when I was either going to be all the way that way or to choose life. So I think what I really have done is that I decided to live.
Well, it's really remarkable.
Thank you.
I understand that this work is featured as part of a PBS Diaries project.
The Diaries
project.
Has
that been aired?
Not yet. They're close to finishing the filming on it, and then they'll go into, I guess, production, whatever, you know, the editing phase. But what that is, there are going to be, I think, four women who featured in it who have written about their lives. Basically, either incest or, you know, very bad kinds of childhoods. And I haven't met the other women, so I don't know what their stories are. But that is very exciting, and I'm looking forward to seeing a finish.
Are you close to the production?
I mean, I think that they are, yeah.
But were you consulted, or are they taking
I mean, they've interviewed me, and they've taped a couple of my readings when I was promoting the book at the American Booksellers Association trade show. They followed me around, and so they've done several interviews and several readings. So, but that's all my part basically is finished.
Well, yeah. I'm looking forward to seeing it then.
Thank you. Yeah, I am too.
This will be pretty exciting.
Yeah, yeah.
What are you working on now, and can you talk to us about it?
I'm working on another memoir, which is not a sequel at all. In this book, Because I Remember Terror, Father, I Remember You, I do address the recovery process in the second section of the book. I wanted to do more with that, but this particular book would not really hold any more information. It really was more focused on incest. And So my new book is much more about the recovery process. So it sort of picks up in sort of the middle of this book and just really expands out. And it is a very different voice and a very different feel to it, and it would never have fit into this book. So that's my new project.
Good. Well, I look forward to hearing about that one, too.
Thank you.
Well, I think it's about time to get ready for your reading this evening.
So terrific. I'm really looking forward to it.
Thank you for speaking with us.
Well, thank you for interviewing me.
William Silverman, and her book is Because I Remember Terror, Father, I Remember You. It is in paperback, just released. Thank you.